Welcome to the Atlantic Group podcast. Our seven tradition states, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Your contribution covers the expenses of our group, this podcast, and also that of our AA service structure. If you are an AA member who finds this podcast helpful, you can contribute using Venmo at AG Tradition 7, the at sign, and then AG Tradition, the number 7, all one word. Or you can use Zelle under agnycinfo@gmail.com. In the note, what's it for, please write AG Podcast. Thank you for your support.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker to share on the eighth tradition is Karen.
I'm Karen, and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 25th, 2018. I have a sponsor. I have a grand sponsor. I sponsor women. Dick, thank you so much for asking me to speak on the eighth tradition. I'm really excited to do service in AA because this program saved my life. So anytime I get to do anything for AA, I'm thrilled. If you're new to this meeting, it is our tradition here the first Tuesday of the month to have somebody talk about the tradition that corresponds with that month. So it's August, Tradition 8. It's also a tradition at this meeting to read the long form of the tradition. And the long form is there to elaborate a little bit on the bite-sized one up there, but it's also there to prevent misinterpretation. So this is the long form of the eighth tradition. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. We define professionalism as the occupation of counseling alcoholics for fees or hire, but we may employ alcoholics where they are going to perform those services for which we may otherwise have to engage non-alcoholics. Such special services may be well recompensed, but our usual AA 12-step work is never to be paid for. The short version is, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. So it's kind of a two-parter. So the first part of the tradition is Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional. This is a free program. We do not charge to have one alcoholic help another alcoholic. The beauty of this program is the altruism in that. It's the fact that it's us giving it away. And even better than that, by helping another alcoholic, we stay sober. And it's simple and lovely, and it's based on the concept that you can't really sell a spiritual experience. So, and you could only imagine what it would be like if you did, right? So sponsors don't charge to sponsor. People don't charge to speak. Groups don't charge to have you as a member. That is all free. When I was a newcomer, I was looking for pretty much every excuse to not stay. And if my first sponsor, Felicia, had walked up to me at the mustard seed and said, I'm going to be your sponsor, I would have been like, yay. But if she had said, it's going to be $75 a step for the first 3 steps and then $50 a step for every step after that, honestly, my feeling is that I would have been instantly turned off. I would have been like, what kind of shady enterprise is this? And imagine, you know, maybe if she didn't call me back in an hour, I'd be thinking, am I getting my money's worth out of this program? And what if a group charged to belong? And what if I was waiting to get a bonus so I could join another group? I mean, the whole thing is awful. Not to mention the fact that it could be taken advantage of, right? People could use that in all sorts of unfortunate ways. And it would exclude people from being here. But the other part of non-professional is that we are not professionals in AA. My grand sponsor has 56 years back, as she likes to say. And she's not a professional. All she has to offer is her experience with this program. She's not an expert AA. She's just a drunk like the rest of us. And that's all she has to offer, that this worked for her. She's a beacon of hope. And by the way, that goes for everybody sitting in this room. If you have 15 days sober and you take the phone number of somebody with 4 days and you give them a call and you tell them to meet you at a meeting, you too are doing 12-step work. That's free. That's free. You're not charging them to help them out. And you are as much a non-professional as my grand sponsor is with 54 years. But you're helping somebody else, and that's the beauty of this program. The second part of the eighth tradition is, but our service centers may employ special workers. Now, I had to call somebody to ask a little bit about this. And luckily, she told me to read AA Comes of Age, which is a terrific book. And it told a story, which I'm going to wildly paraphrase, so I forgive me if I take a little license with it. But early New York AA had a hub that was the 24th Street Clubhouse. Interestingly, it was at 334 and a half West 24th Street in the site of a former speakeasy. And that was where AA sort of like coalesced between 1940 and 1960. And Bill W. was there, and they had this great clubhouse, but it was really busy. They had up to 24 meetings a week. People would come there to dry out. They'd come there to get sober. They'd come there to seek help. And because it was really busy, everything got a little messy. They started giving out keys all over the place. It started to get filthy. They mentioned that coffee wasn't being made. Things were going missing. And so they realized that as well-meaning as service stewards and volunteers are, they couldn't really rely on them to consistently spend all day, every day, keeping that place running smoothly. So Bill had a great idea. There happened to be a fellow in that center, and he was a retired fireman, and he had a pension, and apparently he was looking for an apartment. So Bill and company thought, hey, like, this is going to be the perfect match. We can have this guy just come here and do all that stuff, and we won't have to pay him. We won't have to worry about professionalizing AA. He'll be here to do those jobs for us. And so they presented this fireman with this exciting opportunity. And he sized them up pretty quickly. He said, okay, so you want me to sweep the floors, mop the floors, be here 24/7, clean up drunks, make coffee. I think they had food there then. He said, you want me to do all that? And Bill's like, yeah, and you get a room. And the fireman said, you know, that sounds like a job to me, like a janitor's job. And if you're going to give me that job, you're going to have to pay me. And Bill and company were a little bit flustered. They kind of were like, well, they tried to explain to him, like, this is really, you know, good for you. Anyway, he said, I do my 12th step work. I work with other guys, but this sounds like a job and you're going to have to pay me. So after much discussion, Bill and company decided that it was really the right thing to do to pay this man to do all this work, because he was not doing 12th step work. He was doing the work that makes 12th step work possible. So if he's there and the place is running smoothly, people can show up and go to their meetings. People have a comfortable place to be. They don't have to worry about what the bathroom looks like anymore. Everything works out. So he was employed by AA. And honestly, that was kind of the start of centers for AA. So the New York Intergroup is our city's hub for AA. It answers correspondence, it coordinates meetings, CNT literature, all those things. And they have special workers, you know, mostly people from AA, but they're doing a job that makes 12-step work possible. And that's the same thing for GSO, the General Service Office, which is the national AA site, also Canada, actually. And they sort of are that person nationally. And these places employ special workers, but they employ workers with experience. So if you want to write for the Grapevine, you probably have to have a journalism background. If you're keeping the books for GSO, you might want to have an accounting degree, know your way around an Excel sheet. If you're answering correspondence, maybe you need customer service experience. They are hiring professionals, and they are paying them commensurate with their experience, the economy or the economic background of the place they live, and relative to that job someplace else. It's fair. It's right. And that lets all the 12 step work be possible. That's the difference between it. So AA is free. That's the most beautiful thing in the world. And we are supported by these workers that we pay. And by the way, New York Intergroup, I think, has less than 3 full-time workers. So it's not that they're lavishing, throwing jobs around. They're just, they're hiring the people it takes to get the work done. I think Bill Wilson said something like, we have a moral obligation to make AA available to as many people as possible. And the fact that this is free and open to anybody is a big part of that. And that's it. Thank you.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Greg.
Hi, everyone. I'm Greg. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Karen. That was so great. It's great to be back in this room. I see a lot of familiar faces. This is where I got sober 13 years ago. I got sober June 11th, 2012, right here in Atlantic Group. And I have a home group and a sponsor. Thank you, Jimmy, wherever you're at, for asking me to speak and for calling me every day and keeping me in the program. It's great to be back here. Like I said, I got sober in 2012. I had, the longer the time goes by, the more just run-of-the-mill I feel that my story was. You know, it was DUIs, getting fired from jobs, getting kicked out of schools, making promises to myself that I wasn't going to do it anymore, and then doing it all over again. And I always had this voice in my head that told me that, like, you know, I heard it in the rooms, people say terminally unique. I always thought that I was just like such a POS, like such a liar, such a scumbag, that I was just never going to get this thing. And I would always have this guilt and this shame wrapped up when I would try to, you know, something would happen. I would pull everything down around me and something would happen. And, and I was always just beating myself up. And then for whatever reason, I'd actually come to this group before, and I will never forget the first time I walked in here and saw all these shiny, happy faces. And I remember I thought, oh man, there's a place. I still had some more research to do. It didn't take long. It was another 6 months. And I, for whatever reason, I lost, you know, a job that I really liked. And I was getting out of this really sort of messy, dysfunctional relationship. And I just hit my bottom, and I was at this, I always tell this story, I was at this music festival, and I just had this moment of clarity, and I think it was God. And it was finally, it wasn't you're such a bad person, it was just you need help. It was just, you're an alcoholic, it doesn't make you a bad person, you just need to get help. And it was clear as day. And I knew a guy in this room, JD, who had something that I wanted because, he had this aura, this amazing sense of calm and sobriety. And I knew where to go. I came back here. I went through the steps with him. And I just wanted to quickly say, like, you know, I do this. If you go through the steps, they'll ask you these questions when you do step 6. You know, have I skimped on the foundation? Have I, have I built the cornerstones? And I'm paraphrasing, but it basically asks you very much. So it basically asks you to reflect on your work. And the only reason I mention that is because I had never done anything honestly in my life. And it was a very powerful experience for me to be able to look back at what I had done over those few months and say, you know what? I actually was finally honest about something, and I didn't try to cut corners and pull the wool over everybody's eyes like I had done my entire life. And there was this amazing sense of calm that came over me. And I realized, you know, again, like that I was going to be okay. And I always like to tell this story about my dad when I made amends to him. I'd done a lot, you know, like, just put the guy through hell. And I asked him at the end, you know, if there's anything I can do to make it up to you. And he said, and I was expecting him to say, like, you know, go, you know, read me the riot act, all the times I'd lied to him, all the times I didn't call them for weeks on end, or they got the call when I was in, you know, jail. And he said, you know, what's your day count? And I said, 105. And he said, go for 106. And I always cry when I tell that story. Anyway, it was just amazing. And I'm really blessed. And I had a great, you know, family and support system. I wouldn't be there without them. Anyway, I've had an incredible life and a life beyond my wildest dreams because of this program. And I just want to say, I got to witness the power of this program. We lost a great guy last year. John Paul. And but I saw the sober family that gathered around him in his final days. Well, the whole time. And I saw God in those people. Thank you. And Jimmy, his sponsor, was there in the hospital with him every day. His sponsee showed up. And I learned the true definition of gratitude from John Paul. This was a guy that had his whole life ahead of him. 38 years old, 5 years sober. And, you know, he got a terminal diagnosis. There was nothing he could do. And we had a meeting in his room a couple days before he passed. And, you know, he shared about gratitude. He said how thankful he was to be able to have that meeting and have us all there. It was really, really special. It was just incredible to see the people in this group rally around him. Oh. And that's a gift of this program, you know, to be able to face, you know, they say in the big book, it says a design for living that works in rough going, I think, again, paraphrasing. You know, it doesn't say life's always going to be easy. It just says that, you know, this works no matter what life throws at you. And that's the ultimate tragedy. And I got to see, you know, I got to see God working through all those people. I just want to quickly, before I go, I want to share something real quick. And I respect singleness of purpose, but I think this might be helpful for people. I have 13 years sober, and I just wanted to share that I was walking around with something that was really eating away at me, and I was carrying around a lot of guilt and shame. And I realized that I had a problem, and I was in denial about it because I went through the steps, and I turned my will and my life over, and I didn't want to face this thing. And, you know, there's a lot of shame and stigma attached to this, but I just wanted to say, I if anyone else is struggling with something, maybe it's an outside issue. You know, I had to get help. I'm in another program for sex and porn addiction. And, you know, it's not easy to get in front of a room of people and say that. You know, I feel like, you know, you could say you're an alcoholic these days and people give you a round of applause, but people still, you know, shy away from the sex addict. But I just wanted to say that because, first of all, the support I got, I was carrying around a secret, and the support I got from people like Jimmy and other and Big Matt, who everybody loves here, Matt L. The support I got from people in this room and in this program when I opened up to them, I thought they were going to say, listen, dude, like, you know, stay away. And, you know, I remember Jimmy said, like, I'm so happy. I'm so proud of you for opening up to me, and I know you're going to get the help you need. I just wanted to say that because, you know, it's like, you know, more will be revealed, and, you know, you don't need to sit, with your demons or whatever you're struggling with. And maybe you went through the steps in this program and you need to go through them again in another program. And, you know, again, I thought it was like again, similar to, you know, that voice I had in my head when I couldn't get sober. For the years before I finally did in AA, I had that voice again. And, you know, opening up to some of my closest friends was the thing that, like, you know, made me make that switch that, you know, I'm not a bad person. I just have a problem. And everyone in that group is from AA, and it's like they were waiting for me with open arms. And I just wanted to say, you know, I'm blessed today. I have a beautiful family. I'm so happy to be back here. I have two little kids at home and a wife that has supported me through all of this. who's a saint. And, you know, every day is a new adventure. I'm really, really fortunate to be here. I'm lucky to be alive. And if anybody, you know, just remember, if anyone's struggling with anything, there's help available. There's people waiting for you. And, you know, don't be afraid to reach out. Thank you all. Great to be back. Thank you.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, I'm Nick. I'm gonna. And ask that what you hear here and whom you see here remain here. If you are speaking at another group and wish some of us to come for support, please write the information on the sheet on the bulletin board. Our main speaker tonight is Teresa.
Hi, Teresa, alcoholic. Hi, Teresa. I'd like to thank God for continued grace and mercy and that I'm here today. This is not a religious program, but it is highly spiritual. And again, my name is Teresa, and I'm a blessed recovering alcoholic. Y'all so nicely tidy here, because I really don't be like this, because I'm like, I like to make the noise. I like to know you, let you know I'm in the room. Although I do better from the background. Thank you, Atlanta Group, for having me tonight. My sobriety date is April 5th, 1994. My home group is the Weeksville Group and the Herkimer Sponsor Group in Brooklyn. I have a sponsor and she's over there to my right. I have a couple of sponsees and they're somewhere in the audience. And then I have a lot of people that I know that's on the screen tonight who I see right here. So welcome anybody who's new and coming back. This could be the best day for the rest of your life, because it is exciting for me, because I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And so when, thank you, Karen, and thank you, Greg, for sharing your experience, strength, and hope. My sponsor always says, share what it was like, what it used to be like, what happened now. Well, I'm going to tell you what happened today, how I got here, because I came rushing. I don't know what God does for me, but every time I get a commitment, I get into traffic jams. I get into all kind of stuff. I'm always hustling. And every time he do it, I just surrendered and just started walking saying, well, whatever you got planned, do what you need to do. So then Karen got up here and started doing the Tradition 8. And guess what? I'm a Tradition 8 worker. I'm a special worker for Alcoholics Anonymous. And I usually don't tell that information. I let people around me tell it because I don't believe in titles. I don't come from that kind of background. And what you do don't make you a good person, because you're going to have a good job and be a, you know. Y'all told me I can't use no profanity. So, you know, when you start seeing a hand, you know, I'm trying to work what y'all told me to do. Okay? Somebody said I might see a little sign. I said, I hope they're forgiving. You know, so I'm a special worker. I'm a Tradition 8 worker. And I was hired for New York Intergroup office 4 years ago, right in the darkness of COVID, when the office didn't have an executive director. And I never looked for no job for Alcoholics Anonymous, because what I do in Alcoholics Anonymous, I do because I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And 31 years ago, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, it was not my first stint. I had been here. I thought I was too young. I came in at 30, and I had to go back out and test the waters and find out that I was not too young. And I came back at 33. Imagine that. I was making meetings during that time, 7 days a week. An older man that I was hanging out with introduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was a party girl. And at one point, I realized that it was shakes going on. You know, I didn't really think I never had a problem, but until that shake, I tried to do some mascara and almost took my eye out. And fear came over me, and I guess he knew what was happening. He came into my life after I left my husband over here, and my kids, two daughters was removed from my care, and he thought he could take this person who had so much potential, because I'm educated and I'm smarter than the average bear, you know, kind of person. I thought I was going to solve that problem that I had out there. And then once I got out there, I didn't know. You know, when I picked up at 13 and then picked up again at 16, I never knew that I was never going to be able to put it down on my own. Never did it occur to me that it would be something that I would never be able to put down on my own. I thought I was going to have, because of my education, I was going to find the answer. But after a while, I stopped looking, you know, because it was an all-day job. So people asked me about my job today. I came from a job prior to Intergroup, 23 years working in a cancer center as an administrator. And during COVID, I was still having to go to work while everybody was home at this cancer center. And they put all the administrators on the first floor and to greet all the people coming in, the patients who they didn't know had COVID, and they still was coming because they have to get their treatment. And I was blessed for 23 years to be working there after coming to Alcoholics Anonymous with nothing. I'm the person who had to come in and lose everything before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. There was nothing to be had. If it was one thing left, my mother would have gave me another dollar. I would have still been out there killing myself, but that's just how it was. And alcohol took me to places, to people and things that I never could have imagined in my whole entire life. And I don't really want to go into the doctors of it all, because I could take you to the hallways and all the other kind of stuff that was happening. To this girl who went to good schools, who was taken out of her neighborhood to go to good schools, went to one of the best schools in Brooklyn, just took a test and got skipped out. You know, and that kind of stuff told me I had arrived and I didn't need to sit in class any longer. I started cutting school at 17. And just because I want to be grown and I'm ready to hang out now, because I didn't feel comfortable in my skin as a kid at all. I was never comfortable in my skin. I didn't like what was happening in the household and the weekends with the families get together and all the fighting and all that carrying on. And I never knew what was going to happen when I went home. I was so full of fear, and that fear started bottling up into rage. When my father left when I was 4, my grandma died when I was 4. I wasn't so concerned about daddy leaving. I was upset because my grandma died, and she was my spiritual connection because I used to go to church with her. And she used to have those white outfit on of the usher, lace gloves, the doctor bag, and with her Bible in it. And she used to always have a big, giant raisin. I always talk about it, oatmeal cookie, because that's the best cookies. When they soft, when they hard, I don't want none. And so, no, don't give me none. And when she left, I got this God-sized hole when she died. And when she died, they didn't have the phones in the house. A telegram had to come and tell us that she had died in the hospital. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and started doing the work, my therapist said it was at that point that me and my mother traded places. I'm the oldest of 3 by my mom, and I'm the oldest by 14 by my dad. So you can imagine. The blessing is that me, my brother, and my sister all saw the rules of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the rest of my siblings are still drinking and doing what they do. And it's okay. You know, God saw fit to bring us here. My brother died in 2008. He didn't die from this disease. He died from cancer. And I was there every bit of the way because y'all told me I can do these kind of things. I had a sponsor who passed away, and I have a sponsor now because I'm the one who, when we come into Alcoholics Anonymous, we have one sponsor, and you don't get rid of that sponsor until they die. I don't know about all this other jumping around, bouncing around, and all this stuff that people are doing. Oh, next week I'm new sponsee, and then next week after that. We don't come from that place. You don't get that kind of stuff going on where we came from. Old-timers told us to sit down, don't say a word, and we was respecting of that kind of stuff. We didn't play. And I'm so grateful how they raised me up because they dragged me around from day one. Get in the car. I remember I just listened to a guy in Vancouver. We was in Vancouver, and the guy was sharing. He thought his name was Get in the Car. But that's just how... but that was just how they did us. Every time you turn around, get in the car. So when I finally surrendered, my daughters was gone out of the household. I'm still running around, and then I moved in with this older guy. The story don't make no difference because it led me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can go. You can always come to any meeting where you hear that I'm going to speak, and I can tell you that story off sidebar. But I want to go back to Karen first, when Karen was talking about special workers. I didn't have no idea. I knew people who worked for GSO and stuff like that. It never fazed me. And when I was in the darkest moment of COVID at that job, I was getting disgusted. So I was really trying to go into another field. Somebody wanted me to work at an outpatient treatment center that they owned. And I was moving my master's degree and everything that way. But when God wants something for you, he's going to, that area that I was trying to move to, it was becoming a struggle. Why is it taking? I have all the credentials to do that. And here I go on, I'm on COVID, it's COVID, and I'm coming home. We got Zoom. We was blessed with Zoom. which I'm sorry, I want to let y'all know now, I love Zoom. It's really for the homebound people and people who can't get together. But the people who's supposed to be in person need to get back in person. So that's why I stopped. When Ava told me I could be up here, I said, you sure you want me to be up there? Because I get it real. You know what I'm saying? I go in. About service, you need to be up front in service. I don't want to see you behind no screen. When I go home at night by myself, I'm not hugging the two monitors that I got at home. And that's not a thing. That's just not going to be a thing. It was okay when it first started, but it's not a thing today. I do it only for convenience when I can't get to a meeting. That's what it's for. I want the hugs, because that keeps me spiritually fit. I want all the love up front, because that's the alcoholic who walked into the room. And so I'm sitting at my desk during COVID. I'm the only one in my neighborhood going back and forth to work. And six of us, as administrators, are planted in this room. And my thought was, it's time. The young lady who I love dearly, who's pregnant, her voice is getting on my nerves. And I never realized it was time to go. And I'm sitting up there saying, I need to stab her in the neck with this pencil. And y'all taught me to talk about how I feel and call people because I have numbers, and I still do that 31 years later. And this was 4 years ago. 4 or 5 years ago, yeah. And I called my sister, and I said, I got this, you know, I love Anna, but right now, she said, Teresa, you know you can't go there, right? She said, you know we bring the message to Rikers Island. And that's all you got to tell me, because I know that. That's the only thing that's real for me. That my attitude, take away the alcohol, the person who got walked in the door was a very angry woman. And if I don't rust my disease a day at a time, I can do the same stuff I was doing when I was drunk out there. That's real for me. And I can go through blackouts sober without a drink in my hand. And I know that too. And I had to get real with that when I walked in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had to let y'all know who I was when I came in. That when I wasn't feeling good at certain times of the month, y'all need to, if you want to still be friends with me, you need to go somewhere and sit down, because right now I can't do this. I only have energy for myself. And that's how I keep friends today, because I let them know how I feel. And that's what y'all told me to do. Because when I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't tell y'all what was going on with me. I would take the same person back around people, places, and things and talk about y'all. Instead of telling y'all, and I was making meetings 7 days a week, riding around and everything. And I wasn't telling people that when I was going back home, that man when I was living with, because I'm not crazy and stuff no more, because y'all was teaching me good things. He didn't have no more control of me. So he started dipping and dabbing on somebody else while I was in my outpatient program that he brought me to, that he was picking me up every day. And I never had that 20 minutes before and 20 minutes after that we talk about. So I was being snatched and taken home. I found out he was talking to the young lady down the hall. And the person that came out of the closet that day was somebody who I was scared don't ever want to see again. And that's why I stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not so much today about drinking. It's just who I become when I get very angry. And he didn't know that. And I commenced to cutting tires and bashing up a nice new car that he had just bought. You know, and the sickness of it, he still kept me around for a bit longer. You know what I'm saying? So he was as sick as I was, and found out he was 17 years sober. Never mentioned it to me when he took me to the sober station that he hadn't even been making meetings all them 17 years. So be careful of those dry drunks, because they are more dangerous than the person who's picking up a drink. Matter of fact, they may as well go and get a drink. That's what they was told to me when I came in. And so, COVID, so I'm on a Zoom meeting, and I do a lot of service. I'm in Brooklyn. I was raised up. As soon as I got in the car, I was doing service. In the group level, I started doing it. I got busy. GSR, DCM, all the county stuff in Brooklyn County was doing. I was running around with everybody and seeing me when I came around. I have a service resume better than any resume that I could ever have established from my jobs. And so that was sitting aside, because my sponsor always said, write down all your stuff that you do in Alcoholics Anonymous, and you will have a resume that's unbelievable. Because not only do I do service in Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a president for a retreat movement. I'm into women conferences and all that kind of good stuff. I stay busy because I don't want the devil to start giving me those messages that I could have just one, you know, because I'm hearing people with 30, 40 years talk about they went back out. And I always like to make meetings so I could find out why. And if I'm not sitting in my seat, I will never know. And so I keep coming. And so I was on the meeting, and she said, did you see your email? Because I get emails from everybody, come on past this, come on past that. And she was asking for executive director. And I never thought about it at all. She said, you could do that. Now, we chatting in the chat while everybody on the screen, you know, on the, we chatting. And so she said, you could do that. Look at your email. And it was there. It said they was looking for executive director. I had just passed it by like all the other emails that I had been seeing. And I got up from my screen in my front of my apartment, and I went and got on my knees in my bedroom. And I said, if God, if this is what you want for me, because she always tell me, she pushes me to the things that I need to do. And I said, if this is something that you want me to do, you're going to make sure that I get it done. Now, prior to that, my first sponsor died in 2015. And she always told me to keep a file cabinet. So I have history about a lot of stuff that went on in Brooklyn and all the stuff that I was involved in, spiritual breakfast and all kind of stuff. So when they asked to put the resume together, that's what I did. I just went and got that resume that she told me about that I had all the time. And then I took the resume from my job and all the education that I was able to come back and do because of y'all, you know, pushing me. Go get your driver's license, because I was driving around without a license when I came in here. I'm one of those people that was sitting in Hung Shaw for a good 10 years, still carrying a blade because I love them so well. You know, and they had to tell me to take that out of my bag. The old timers would embarrass you. Yeah, you still standing up there with a knife in your pocket, Teresa, when you're going to take it out. You know, such all that kind of stuff. So I had to change that person that came in. And so I got that resume together and the job resume together and everything like that. And the work began. But what happened was I hadn't grieved my first sponsor's death. And so it opened up another door for me to deal with. So I had to go and deal with her. I had to go back and I had to deal with the fact that she died. And that was a loss for me. Because what that woman did for me and plenty of the women that's sitting here, especially the sponsor I have now, she watched me. The one I have now watched me come in. She was the first woman who handed me a flyer that said, and it was on that old paper from the machines they use in school, the one you turn and it have the nasty ink and stuff. I don't know if y'all old enough to remember that. I'm 64, I don't have no problem telling y'all that. So y'all go back if you choose to. And she would be handing it out, her and her sponsor, about women's meetings and this women's conference. You know, just, and you could go, giving you hope that even though you're in this pitiful state, that you're coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, that you can do other things in here, that you don't have to be bored at Alcoholics Anonymous. So I say out loud, if you're bored at Alcoholics Anonymous, you need to keep coming. That is too many things in here to do. Too many things in here to do. And I'm going to tell you, just like I told Ava, if you're out here and you ain't doing no service, please give me a call, because I do like to put people in places, you know, get you something busy to do like they did with me. I was voluntold for 31 years. 31 years. I'm still being told to do stuff. And so I surrendered to that thought. And so I started working for New York Intergroup when it was dark. There was nobody to tell me what to do. I had to use a computer to tell me all the past history. Thank you for sharing about 1946. That's when the first Intergroup office was over here. Matter of fact, August 1st was 32 years that we was where we at on 7th Avenue. So when you said that, it was dear to my heart, because I've been reading that same stuff that you read. I took that. I had a commitment in Vancouver to talk about intergroup office for New York, because we have, you know, I deal with a lot of intergroup people from around the world and in the United States. And so that's a blessing, because I get to talk to people. My job is about talking to people and getting the history when they come in and get a coin and all kinds of good stuff. I get stories. Who better job than that, right? People say, how was your day? My day is fine. Until I get that person who call and tell me they got 41 years and why is the group doing this? And I'm like, we don't handle that kind of stuff. And then they get mad at me because they want me to come down and be a referee. And they don't know that's not what we do in New York Intergroup, you know? We take care of that alcoholic that needs to know where the next meeting is. We take care. Thank you, Vince. I love Vince. CTFC did a dance 2 years ago. I'm dancing, trying to get my groove on, even though I'm working for the night. Here comes Vince with a check for the tables for the Bill W. dinner dance. He came dancing up to me and handed me a check. I'm like, what? Well, you know, I love it. I mean, you can't get this nowhere else, right? So God put me into a place where he know that I feel safe. You know, if I don't feel nowhere else. When I walk through the doors, I replace almost every member of my family because they became people, places, and things too. And so I got a lot of aunts and uncles and brothers and stuff in here who came in here and showed me the way, who protected me while I sat in here. There was no 13 stepping around Teresa or nothing like that in Brooklyn. People was doing what they had to do. And I went wherever they told me to go, and I didn't back talk, even though plenty of times it was in my mind and it stayed there. Because I was raised, you don't talk back to older people. You know, you respect your seniors. But that wasn't the case when I was out there drinking and I was crazy. And when I wanted to get what I wanted to get, all bets was off, and whoever was in my way, they was devoured at that time. I have blackouts that could have put me in jail. That's why I like that story about Rikers Island, because my last blackout that was devastating enough, and I will never remember, is almost killing my husband and knocking on the door after I left and don't even remember when I left, and coming back when his face is already bandaged and his chest is bandaged up and asking him, what happened to you? And him and the rest of the people in the house chimed on that I did that to him. And I will never, like they told me when I came into the room, they got a therapist. Will never remember that day. But I could have been behind bars if they had pressed charges. They could have went a step further. I could have been, I heard stories when I came in about people behind the bars that don't remember what happened to them. And they're doing time for murder that they can't even remember committing. Do I want to be that person? No. And I wasn't too scared about it once I got in here, because I know, you know, if I keep doing what I need to do a day at a time, I don't have to worry about picking up no drink and doing anything else. I'm one of those persons, alcohol is my gateway. I can't tell you what I'm going to do, where I'm going to be, and where I'm going to wind up once I pick up a drink. And then I had a lot of condiments that went that. So it was, and I'm grateful for the extra stuff that I added to my story with my alcohol, because it pushed me into Alcoholics Anonymous faster. Because I realized alcoholics is a slow, deadly killer, and you stay out there long enough, it will make you suffer. See, I wanted to be gone. I wanted to be gone out of here a long time ago. I wanted to be gone when I was a little girl and listening to all the arguments in my house. I never really wanted to be here. I didn't feel like I fitted anywhere until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and y'all told me I belonged here. And if you didn't tell me, I was going to sit down anyway, because there was nowhere else for me to go, you know. And so I rebuilt my life a day at a time, and I'm growing up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. That 13-year-old girl is in a 64-year-old woman's body, and it took me up until last week to realize, oh, next in January, I could get half price for senior citizen stuff, because I still think I'm 30-something. You know what I'm saying? Like, and I did it so loud, like people looked at me. I'm like, oh no, you know what? I just realized that I could get half price on, you know, and then maybe accessoride and all this other stuff. I'm like, oh my God, when did I start thinking that? I never. You know what I'm saying? I never. And so I come into the rooms, and I have sponsor. I have sponsees. I take people through the steps. I have a candlelight group of women that I sponsor. We meet every month, and we get into literature, and we cook at each other's house. And my sponsor did that for us. And we started a women's group from her floor. 17 sponsees. We had Women in the Spirit, was founded 25 years ago in Brooklyn, because it started in her living room. And I carry that stuff on with my sponsees so that they could take that on with their sponsees. So they'll learn how to have social graces and everything else, and be able to invite people to their house without having to feel ashamed or anything else. Because it is scary trying to bring people and try to do this stuff a day at a time. It is. You know, today, people say, oh, you like a false social butterfly. To the no. You said I can't say nothing, right? To the no. I'm not a social butterfly. I know that if I do not sit with y'all and let y'all know what's going on with me, that same person that banged up that man's car and stabbed his tires and stuff, she would come out the closet. Because we only arrest ourselves a day at a time. It doesn't disappear. And if you're waiting for stuff to disappear, shame on you. It's the work to keep that person in the cage. I do that on a daily basis. So I got here, and I heard these two wonderful speakers. Thank you so much, Karen. I love when people talk about service. I love when I get put on the spot when they talk about service, because I was like, that's my high. You know, I like start hyperventilating and all stuff. They know I do that, right? I really do. And so if nobody said they love you, I do. If you don't have nothing to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, let me tell you how I got this job. It was a long list of interviews during COVID. And I had to leave my job and go home and sit in front of my laptop, and put on another dress and put on pearls because, you know, it was Kamala Harris and everybody's time. So you put on your pearls and stuff because it was a time for women. And I would sit there. And for October, November, and December, I was making evening interviews with the six people who was to pick the next executive director. So I didn't walk in there because I stopped drinking. I didn't walk in there because, you know, I had some time in Alcoholics Anonymous. My credentials brought me into the room into that interview. My credentials let me sit there for 6 weeks until they went from a large list of candidates to the small one, and I was offered the job. December 22nd, on my mother's birthday in December of 2020, into an office, and they told me, this is what we, can you do this? Can you move that office and from the second floor and find a place for it to be? Well, yes, I can do that. And all I had to do was start putting my foot together and do that because it was too much rent on the second floor. I like to tell the story. It was too much rent on the second floor. They wanted it to be moved. And my thing is, it's in the prime place of real estate. It should not go nowhere else but where it's at because everybody can get there. So I got some architecture and I got some information from people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I like to hobnob with people who know how to do stuff because we all smart people in this room. So, you know, I like to network. And I was able to talk to some people. We had a office rebuilt for us on the third floor. It wasn't there. It wasn't there at all. And we had all that stuff done, and then we had to design it. And everything had to go through our steering committee, and it was talked about in our delegates meeting. So everything is down in minutes and stuff like that. And we do a lot of stuff in that office because we want to take care of the people. And it's not about me when I go to work. Because when I stay all about Teresa, stuff happens. So if I don't start using my energy to help the people who had their hands out, when I came in 6 months afterwards, I got my daughter back because the old timers was paying attention to her in a meeting. So they would sit and do things with her so I could sit up front and get the message. And right after that, I had to go back to school and upgrade all the skills and all that knowledge because I was doing stuff to my brain. So I had to reset. And add some more stuff to it because I love learning. And I did that. So I went and did all that stuff. And Alcoholics Anonymous, the old timers in here afforded me that kind of stuff. And they told me what to do when I needed to do whatever I needed to do. When you needed to get a divorce, please do it before your first year so you don't have to worry about nobody getting sick on you and you have to pay them some alimony and stuff like that. So I saved my welfare check and got my first divorce in 1998. I was not going to be taking care. No, I mean, I'm sober. I'm not going to be taking care of a man I ain't been living with for 10 years. But that was a possibility if I hadn't did what I was told. When they told me, go back to school, I went back to school. You know, get your driver's license, Teresa, instead of running around with a permit. We know you know how to take tests and stuff like that. But you can't run around with a permit the rest of your life. So I went and got my license. You know, because I'm grateful I didn't have one when I was out there. Because I would have sold my car. I know what I would have done. I saw fit to make sure I didn't have none of those ideals. My geographics was in my neighborhood. And I came in, I'm from Brooklyn. Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn in the 80s. And that's all you got to say. If you don't know, and I lived on a block where a lot of stuff was really happening. I came from the school of hard knocks. And so when I see my life was dwindling away and I didn't have no other way but this way, I had to surrender. And like I said, I didn't come in here and sit down first. I thought I was too young at 30. So I ran back and forth and got coins and chips and all that stuff until I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I knew when I sat down, I was at home. I just didn't know what to expect. You know, the fear of the unknown. You know, and I no longer thought I was unique. And I got the message sitting on a train, going back up to Harlem to get high with my sister and it didn't work out, and I had to take a 35-minute ride. I always tell you, first step, 1, 2, and 3, right on a train. Coming back to Brooklyn, it's 25 minutes, and I tell the story all the time. It took me 3 hours to get home, just downtown Brooklyn, because God interceded on that train. Anything could happen to me. It was crowded. I still had a leather bag and stuff on. I had stuff in my pocket. And for me to survive that trip, I knew it was a miracle, and I started talking to God on that train. And I was like, I'm willing to do whatever I need to do. When I get off the train, whatever he was having, I would be getting off the train and going back uptown and coming back. I don't understand. I had no control of my own self. He was talking to me while I was on that train ride. When that train ride was finished, the doors opened, I wound up downtown in my mother's house, and I said, I surrender, I'm going to back into a detox. And of course, that was the fourth one. So she gave me that look like, okay. And I started working from that point on. I went and I did what I was supposed to do. I went to detox and I didn't get high in detox. And I showed up for my outpatient program when I was supposed to. I did meetings all in Manhattan. So I know mustard seed and all that. I grew up in Manhattan first because my program was down in Alphabet City on 28th Street. And I still had to go back to Bed-Stuy. And from that train ride from my house to from the train station, I took every day because I didn't want to walk up and down Myrtle Avenue. Because anybody know Myrtle Avenue? I was getting high from one end of it to the next. And so I had to do everything I was supposed to do to stay away from that next one, which means people, places, and things. I could not afford no one to say, hey, Teresa, come on. Because, you know, everything is free the first time. The first one's free. First drink is free. Thank you so much, Tom. Yeah. So it fills my heart. I love what y'all do, the Atlanta Group. You know, just screw the hard docs for some folks, but y'all do it well, you know. I'm always impressed when groups carry out, you don't really need a group inventory because you're doing and you're serving and doing what you're supposed to do. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful that my group is doing that. I have two home groups only because one was online for a while and I still do the in-person thing. And I'm so sorry I had to add another one to my plate, but oh well, you know what I'm saying? Because I need in-person stuff. And I do this here, like I said, when I have groups that I deal with, people from Philly and all that stuff that's online, and I have certain meetings that I go to. But I really try not to take too many commitments online because it's hard to adjust myself to get from that job in my car because I drive to work every day so far from Brooklyn to Manhattan to go home in front of a computer and turn it on after I just turned it off after 10 hours and sit down and say, what? Now I got to turn the screen off because it's time for me to eat, you know, all kind of stuff. That's rude, you know. So it's best for me to go from a meeting straight from my job. They say always have a destination. They marked out our destinations. So I'm grateful. Like I said, if anybody didn't tell you they love you today, I do. And I'm not taking commitments because I work for New York Intergroup. This is my service for myself, not because I work for New York Intergroup. I have to tell certain people that because they don't realize I'm an alcoholic. And he told me it's goodbye.